Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
It's all over but the counting, gang, all $6 billion worth of it. One-time hopeful Tim Pawlenty on the race and the economy coming up today. And forget Obama and Romney. Boy, do we have a candidate for you. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by American Express Bank FSB, offering high-yield savings accounts designed with convenient features to help reach savings goals. To learn more or open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/savings. Member FDIC.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. This is the Marketplace podcast for Monday, the 5th of November, which means tomorrow is the 6th, which means we are down to the last two dozen or so hours of campaign 2012. And what an oh-so-very expensive campaign it has been. You roll it all up, all the presidential primaries, the general election, Congress and state and local offices, and the tab comes in at something like $6 billion. That's according to the Center for Responsive Politics. And it does sound like a whole lot of money. It is. But Marketplace's David Gurr reports from Washington. It's also not really so much.
To you and me, $6 billion is big bucks, but to Uncle Sam, it's chump change. Kevin Jakes teaches finance at Baldwin-Wallace University.
In reality, that's a small fraction of 1% of what the economy does.
Less than 1/20th of 1% of our GDP. Mark Vittner is an economist at Wells Fargo.
We've got a $16 trillion economy.
That's trillion with a T. Maybe some context will help.
Americans spend $6 billion on lots of things.
Phil Swagel is a public policy professor at the University of Maryland.
Americans spend about $6 billion every year renting videos.
For $6 billion, you could buy 60 Boeing 737s. It's how much Google would have paid for Groupon back in 2010. Bob Biersack is with the Center for Responsive Politics.
Somebody once told me that we spend more on Halloween every year than we do on politics. I don't know if that's true.
It is true, actually. The National Retail Federation says Americans spent $8 billion on candy and costumes this year. Tony Corrado is a campaign finance expert at Colby College, and he says campaign spending does have economic benefits. They're just limited.
While we've had a substantial amount of spending, most of it has been very concentrated, affecting very few voters.
Among them, the owners of TV stations in places like Florida, Virginia, and Ohio, who've sold millions of dollars worth of campaign ads. In Washington, I'm David Gurra for Marketplace.
There is still much to be done up the eastern seaboard from Washington in the New York tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Power is gradually coming back. Businesses are slowly reopening. Now, increasingly, it's a supply chain problem. Marketplace's Mark Garrison has that story from New York.
The decades-old downtown confectioner Lilac Chocolates is operating again, says Stephen Evans.
The village store was without power for 5 days, and we're back now and we're quite busy.
And the legendary Lower East Side smoked fish shop, Russ and Daughters, is bustling with hungry lox lovers. Nikki Russ Fetterman is the fourth-generation co-owner.
Some people are exceptionally understanding, but this being New York, there are a lot of people who just want to get back into things and they want it now.
The store opened on generator power Thursday, thrilling electricity-starved neighbors. But shipping to national customers just restarted today. The famed fish is ready to move, but she's warning clients that shippers are struggling.
There's such a shortage of gas that they're trying to just do what they can and get pickups made however they can.
Harvard Business School logistics professor Anant Raman thinks of many other Northeast businesses as having two problems. Here's the first.
Missing product.
Stores can't sell what they don't have. But Raman says most hurricane-related shipping problems should be taken care of in time for the holiday rush. The other problem could last longer.
Missing customer.
Consumers who need money for hurricane repairs will cut holiday spending.
It could easily affect a consumer electronics retailer, could affect clothing very, very substantially.
People with heavy storm impact may not buy anything they don't have to for months, Raman says. The Northeast makes up a fifth of America's GDP. So a hit to spending here will be felt nationally. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Wait and see pretty much sums up the pre-election mood on Wall Street today. Details, numbers, when we get there. Once upon a time, back in the early days of this campaign, former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty made a short, not-so-sweet run at the Republican nomination. Things didn't really work out for him, so he eventually wound up stumping for Mitt Romney. And then about a week ago, he became the CEO of the Financial Services Roundtable. It's a Washington lobbying group that represents banks and other big financial institutions. Governor, thanks for being here.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
First of all, given the news of the day, I can't help but ask if you'd rather have done something different back in Iowa a year ago so you'd be on the ballot tomorrow.
Well, look, I had my chance at it. I think my presidential campaign lasted all of 10 minutes or so. But nonetheless, I had a fair shot at it and it couldn't get it done. And now the attention turns to the nominees and the election tomorrow. And I know people are anxious and waiting to see what the results are going to be.
I wonder if you... thought about the irony, appreciate the irony of you now being a key Washington lobbyist, having run for much of your political career as a guy who carried on against the entrenched interests. I mean, certainly in your presidential campaign, there was a whole lot of that.
Well, you know, my role has changed, but in taking on the leadership of the Financial Services Roundtable, you know, it's a lobbying organization, but my leadership position, you know, involves more than just advocating for policy positions. The financial institutions in this country are really important to the economy. And then also, obviously, the industry's gone through a tough patch.
The industry may well have had a tough patch. I wonder if they've had a tougher patch than anybody who suffered during the financial crisis.
Well, the financial crisis has had a devastating effect on individuals and families and people and the economy. We need to make sure that doesn't happen again. And that's why, you know, when you look to the future, you want to make sure you look at a piece of legislation like Dodd-Frank. You don't want it to be overbaked. However, you don't want to have the government go so far that they put so many burdens on lending that people don't make loans and do the things you need to have an economy that's vibrant and positive.
Let's talk about Dodd-Frank for a second, because it has now been 27-something months since that bill was passed and due in no small part to lobbying and lawsuits by the financial industry. It is not yet fully in effect. When can we expect that law to go into effect?
Well, the law, of course, has been passed, and now you have the regulators and the people who oversee the implementation and definition of it in the bureaucracy taking longer than many, I think, expected or hoped to put forward these regulations. You know, the industry has said in many cases, gosh, there's a lot of uncertainty given how long it's taken. But also, we want to make sure they're clear and simple and practical and not written in such a way where there's uncertainty.
Governor, you missed the point of the question. It's been more than 2 years, and yet in large part because of what your constituent members are saying and doing in courts and in lobbying, that law has not yet been allowed to fully be implemented.
Well, the cause and effect part of your question, I would just flag a little bit and say, look, we obviously have commented, and the financial institutions have commented about the need to have rules that are clear and appropriate and strike the balance that I just mentioned. But to say that the delay in actually then pulling the trigger and getting the rules finalized and published is because of lobbying, I don't think that's fully accurate or a fully fair statement.
How did you get this job? I mean, you're not a guy who's known as a lobbyist. You're not a guy who's known as a financial services expert. I mean, you ran, you know, famously your line during the campaign to the financial industry was get your snout out of the trough. I mean, how'd you wind up doing this?
Well, I was contacted by an executive search firm that was trying to fill the vacancy is the technical answer. But I also think from the institution's perspective, I think they needed somebody from the outside who wasn't just a, you know, typical insider from Wall Street.
Can we take it from your having accepted this job that your future lies not in electoral politics? I'm asking now, obviously, of the 2014 campaign and Al Franken in the state of Minnesota for the Senate.
Well, I've publicly stated that I won't be running for public office in 2014 against Senator Franken or anyone else in Minnesota or anywhere else. And my focus now is on this job and trying to do what I can to reinstate the credibility and vitality and integrity of these institutions.
Tim Pawlenty, former governor of the state of Minnesota, former presidential candidate, now the president and CEO of the Financial Services Roundtable. Governor, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kai.
There's a new reality show premiering tonight on Bravo that's getting some buzz. It's a merger, if you will, of Hollywood sex appeal with Silicon Valley's geek power. Randy Zuckerberg, older sister of Facebook's Mark, is behind it. It's called Startups. KQED's Arthi Shahani reports that Silicon Valley is cringing, but Yes, still sure to tune in.
Mark Zuckerberg didn't show up to Randy's red carpet launch last night in San Francisco. Still, Randy says she owes it all to him.
My brother really inspired me to go do things that were out of his comfort zone. And, you know, I think a lot of the buzz around this show already shows that nothing that's safe is ever worth doing.
Startups follow six entrepreneurs as they get smashed at toga parties, hook up, and in between, pitch their startups to big-time venture capitalists.
If you're not aiming for something $1 billion or larger, why waste your time?
The future of the world is in our hands, and we're not sitting back and letting it pass us by.
Lest you confuse this with a future envisioned by, say, the Kardashians, executive producer Zuckerberg says she has a higher purpose in mind, to recruit more women into tech.
I don't think you're going to do that by forcing computer science programs down your throat. I think you're going to do it by making it really cool and part of pop culture.
Sarah Austin, an internet personality whose tweets are worth thousands of dollars, is building her own web TV show. Austin claims she didn't even want to be on cable until Zuckerberg personally called her.
I figured if there was a show about Silicon Valley startups and I wasn't on it, everybody would be asking me why I didn't do it.
And for anyone worried that manufacturing is dead in America, meet David Murray.
I've had my nose done, I've had my eyes done twice, hair transplants, fractal thermage, IPL laser.
The Carnegie Mellon grad is building a mobile app to help people achieve goals like weight loss using a buddy system. While Bravo's gotten a lot of heat for an all-white cast, Zuckerberg dismisses the criticism.
This is not, you know, the authentic depiction of the Valley. This is an authentic depiction of the Valley.
Zuckerberg says if Startups gets a season two, she's hoping for a cameo by her little brother Mark. In San Francisco, I'm Aarti Shahani for Marketplace.
Coming up, elections made easy.
Forget China and Iran. What's America's biggest threat? Frowns.
Hello Kitty for president, for reals. But first, let's do the numbers. In some very light pre-election trading, the Dow Industrials picked up 19 points today, a 10th percent, closed at 13,112. The NASDAQ added a half percent, 17 points, 29.99. The number of the S&P 500 rose 3 points, 0.2%. 14.17 is where that came to rest. Financial firms were down nearly across the board. Bank of America withdrew 1%. Citigroup gave back 0.7%. JPMorgan Chase trimmed about 0.3%. Healthcare companies, which have a whole lot at stake in tomorrow's outcome, had a mostly up day. Humana padded on 0.4% after weak earnings but stronger profits. Aetna pocketed more than 0.5%. Cigna ticked up more than 0.3%. Zillow took a beating after reporting decent earnings but a poor outlook. The online real estate search firm lost more than 22% in trading after the bell, much like the Zestimate on my house, by the by. Tokyo's Nikkei, just for the heck of it, declined 0.5%. Bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 1.68%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
This podcast is supported by American Express Bank, FSB, offering high-yield savings accounts with a competitive variable interest rate and convenient access via phone or web. Link your existing bank accounts without switching banks. To learn how this FDIC-insured high-yield savings account can complement your savings goals and to open an account online, visit personalsavings.com/savings. Member FDIC.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at events coming up Tuesday. It's the big day. Americans go to the polls. The United Nations observes the International Day for Preventing the Exploitation of the Environment in War and Armed Conflict. And Meet the Press made its TV debut on November 6, 1947. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Voting is, when you get right down to it, a personal thing. Even when you line up ideologically with a particular candidate or party, sometimes there is just something that makes you hesitate, which gets us to Brett Fry. He's 31 years old. He's the owner and sole employee of his own cigar shop in Manassas, Virginia, about an hour or so west of Washington, D.C. He's also an Iraq war vet who, despite being a lifelong GOP supporter, still calls himself undecided. Brett, it's good to talk to you.
You as well.
So it's a day out, man. Are you a real undecided, or are you leaning one way undecided?
I'm a leaning one way undecided. I'm leaning right. I've been a registered Republican since I was able to vote. So I'd say I'm a leaning undecided.
What would it take for Governor Romney to seal the deal? Because my guess would be that he'd be real interested in doing that right about now.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he would. My issues with that are his ambition or over-ambition with military. Not so much spending on defense, but more so being a former soldier who served, I worry that any of our soldiers are put in harm's way, i.e. a war.
But what else is an issue for you? I mean, when you go in there, other than the military and your business concerns, what do you got? What do you want to see progress on?
Well, entitlement's a big thing for me. We need to find a balance in this country. I do believe that it's all too easy to take the road of unemployment and or handouts. For me, that's a big issue. Now, that being said, I have had periods in my life where I have needed unemployment, and I have received that. But I was actively, truly trying to find a job.
You appreciate the irony there, right?
Hey, 100%. And like I said, I mean, this isn't with eyes wide shut here.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that. And by all means, I'm not saying that we need to eliminate it completely. I just think there needs to be some form of balance.
What's your biggest worry then economically in the next 4 years?
The area I'm in, will we lose jobs? Will we lose jobs? Will we succeed in creating more jobs? I mean, that's really the issue, because if people have extra discretionary income, then products like luxury premium tobacco can be purchased.
It does sort of seem like you picked an especially vulnerable line of work, right?
I have, yes, indeed.
He says eyes wide open, right?
That's it.
Brett Frye. He's a small businessman. He is a registered Republican, has not yet made up his mind. He owns a luxury and premium cigar shop in Manassas, Virginia. It's called Tobacology. All right. Hey, Brett, thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Thank you.
When you lose power, like so many millions in the Northeast did when Sandy hit, a lot of whom are still in the dark, by the way, you got your basic problems. No lights, no heat sometimes, no stoves. Also, no money. Cash machines and credit cards weren't working. Neither were electronic benefits cards, which left a whole lot of food stamp users with no way to buy food. Marketplace's Stacey Vanek-Smith has that story.
Ozzie Hernandez is at the Stop One Food Market on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. The store reopened today and is taking EBT cards. That's good news for many residents of the nearby LaGuardia housing project. A lot of them rely on food stamps.
The electricity was out. People were not able to use their BET cards. You really didn't have any type of access to food.
That was the case for many of the 1.8 million New Yorkers who use food stamps, says Kevin Concannon with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which runs the food stamp program.
Around 50% of the stores that could process food stamp were either shut down or their power was shut down.
Concannon says food stamp recipients in New York will get half of their October benefits reimbursed. The department has also set up a backup payment system to use when the power goes out. Marcel Van Ooyen is the executive director of Grow NYC, which runs farmers markets. He says farmers markets were running and taking EBT cards the day after the storm because they use battery-powered card scanners.
The people who did find us were very thankful to have us there. It allowed them to buy some food that they didn't have access to anywhere else.
Mark Rank is a professor of social welfare at Washington University. He says it's important to keep expanding the number of businesses that accept food stamps.
If you spread out, you're getting some folks that are able to get in when a lot of other vendors can't.
Rank says since the financial crisis, the number of people who use food stamps has risen sharply. It's now around 15%. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
It There's a whole bunch of things that are going to start happening the day after tomorrow. Exactly what those things are, of course, depends a whole lot on who wins. But here is one that's going to happen no matter what. The election news vacuum will be filled, in part, by news of the still-going-strong European debt crisis. There was a big meeting in Tokyo today about cutting international debt. The quick headline is that the G20 is going to take its time on that for fear of slowing an already slow global economy. In Spain, home of the most recent acute debt crisis and overwhelming unemployment, the economic crisis has become an immigration problem, as Christopher Worth reports.
If you live in Barcelona and are from South or Central America, then you might listen to BCN Latina. Barcelona, Latina, it's a small radio station that caters to the city's Latin American population.
Seguimos aquí en el despertador. Tenemos una semana, ¿no?
And 3 days a week, Javier Bonamy hosts this call-in show that offers legal advice on immigration to Spain. But lately, the most common question is how to find a job. Average unemployment in Spain is at 25%. For immigrants, Bonamy says, that number is nearly 40%.
And the problem is, if they lose their jobs, they lose their documentation. So they go back to being illegal immigrants, which is like going back 10 years when they first arrived here and had nothing.
They may have come with nothing, but back then, Spain was a land of opportunity for immigrants. Libertad González is with Pompeu Fabra University in Barcelona. She says in the decade before the crisis, Spain saw an influx of more than 5 million immigrants from Latin America, Africa, and the Middle East, all in search of work.
In 1998, immigrants or foreign-born individuals in Spain represented about 2% of the working-age population. And 10 years later, they were more than 15%.
When Spain's economy soured and the jobs disappeared, many thought those newcomers would disappear too. For a time, the Spanish government even offered money to immigrants to return home. But, González says, despite Spain's dire economy, not many took the offer.
I'm thinking they're hoping things are going to get better. So most people seem to have stayed.
After all, she says, many immigrants have families in Spain. Their children go to good Spanish schools. At this playground in Barcelona, a group of boys play basketball on a dry dirt court. Falbis Mendez brings her son here every afternoon. She says she's torn between joblessness in Spain and what could be an even worse situation back home in the Dominican Republic.
I'm desperate. We think maybe we should return to our country, but I don't have a job there either. We don't even have money for the plane.
And as the economic crisis grows worse, life in Spain gets even harder. This year, the Spanish government cut access to universal health care for immigrants who've lost their legal status, many of them when they lost their jobs. Some in Spain accuse immigrants of straining public services and taking Spanish jobs. But that doesn't dissuade Edison Sarita, who runs this small fruit and vegetable store in Barcelona. Sarita and his wife moved here from Ecuador 10 years ago. He worked construction while they saved to buy a house. But when the crisis hit, Sarita lost his job, so he took a gamble and opened this shop in one of the deepest recessions Spain has ever known.
6 months ago, I decided to invest the savings I had into this new business because it's better than nothing. It's very slow, but at least I'm surviving. We'll see how long that lasts.
He says no matter how bad the situation in Spain gets, they have no plans to go back home. In Barcelona, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
There are more choices in this race than just Obama and Romney, you know. There's the Green Party, the Libertarians, Peace and Freedom, and the American Independent. That's a lot, so you can understand why somebody might be undecided. But waiting until you're in the voting booth to make up your mind? That's a little nerve-wracking. Comedy writer Tamara Federici is worried those anxious, undecided voters may fall for a certain candidate with childlike charm and commercial appeal.
Undecided voters of Ohio and Colorado, Virginia and Florida, Wisconsin and New Hampshire, I take this election seriously. If you have not picked a candidate yet, I assume you're someone who must live for the moment, ruled by their gut, whimsical, and possibly distracted by loud noises and shiny objects. If left alone in a voting booth, I'm afraid you will panic. And if enough of you panic, freak out, or show up high to the polls, in the same numbers which tipped the 2000 election when Ralph Nader ran, you might just vote for a cartoon cat. It'll be disastrous. Some would say catastrophic. But I wouldn't. I'd say disastrous. That's right, Hello Kitty is running for president. And you must not be swayed, you crazy undecided voter. Not even if your booth is filled with Hello Kitty-themed tinsel. I know you'll want to vote for her. Who wouldn't? Little pink nose, whiskers, running on a platform of happiness, friendship, and fun. Sure, she'll promise you the moon, but can't she deliver? She's a cat without a mouth. Forget China and Iran. What's America's biggest threat? Frowns. And the cat's only solution so far is to turn them upside down. Who would she appoint to the Supreme Court? Pro-hug judges who will shift the court's balance? Japanese businessmen? People who are cute? Hello Kitty does support FEMA, but only because it has the same letters as FAME, and that's exactly what she wants. I implore you, undecided voters, choose one of the two humans instead. The black one or the white one, I don't care which. Just don't tank this when you're in the booth. Elect someone you actually believe in.
Tamara Federici's work has appeared in The New Yorker and Mad Magazine. Hello Kitty for president, by the way. Totally, totally real. Google told me so.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note today, patriotism and civic pride can be yours for just $3.80 per thousand. I'm talking about those little I voted stickers you get at polling places. ElectionStickers.com, turns out, is your one-stop shop. I kid you not. Catches you got to order in bulk to get the good rate. They're guaranteed sticky for 8 years, though. So, you know, save them for next time if you need to. Most of all, though, just vote, would you? All right, we got to go. That's Marketplace from APM. Today, the Dow picked up 19 points, about a 10%. The NASDAQ added a 0.5%, 17 points. The S&P 500 up 3 points, 0.2%. Our producers include Bridget Bodner, Millie Jefferson, John Ketchum, Megan Larson, Joel Patterson, and Jolie Podokas. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you back here tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.